Hi, everybody. Welcome to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend Patrick Dean, who doesn't take it real seriously, and with whom I've already been talking to for a long time.
24 minutes. 24 minutes, and we're doing the intro.
The edits will fix all this up, and thank you in advance to our editors, Jeremy and Jen.
Ooh. What you drinking?
Sound of Aldi water.
Oh, hey, yeah.
And here is whiskey in this one. Double fisting is different when you're old.
I love that LaCroix, when LaCroix first came out, it was like $2 for a 12-pack from like even a nice store. Because there's nothing, it's literally water. Like, you're paying for the aluminum. That's what you're paying for at that point. Mm-hmm. And then Aldi is like, this is too much. This is too much. We can beat this. We think we can beat this.
And LaCroix said, okay, we'll increase our prices. Is that helping? Mm-hmm. Is that doing it?
And Aldi said, we'll go even cheaper. And LaCroix's like, you're not very good at negotiating, are you?
I will say the Costco brand, though, is got Aldi beat even.
Really?
Ooh. It's like a 30-pack for, I think it's like $9.
Boy.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
Sounds like college. Sounds like Keystones.
It does sound like Keystones, except there's even fewer ingredients in water than there is in beer. So it's the same.
I think Keystone had same. Just had the two ingredients. It was carbonated water and
Bud Light.
Bud Light. And they would just mix them together and
mm-hmm. Oh, man. 30 stones for 20 bones, or what was that?
It was 30 stones for 12 bones, I think is what it was. 12,
oh boy.
Man. And you'd show up at a party with that 30 pack on your shoulder. Well, I mean, mm-hmm. or if you're me, like dragging it behind you like a dead body.
Sure.
But theoretically, you could put it on your shoulder if you had.
Yeah, most like normal sized humans could do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Normal sized human, they could absolutely do that. And you were like the life of the party for 12, 18 minutes, something like that.
I mean, that's all you need.
And then they're gone.
Yeah.
And they're gone.
Yeah. And then someone rings out the beast, and they're like, it's...
Oh, or Beast Ice. Remember Beast Ice?
Beast Ice.
Mm-hmm. Horrible.
I don't remember much of it, but I remember I remember it being there.
You and I had a Beast Ice night in college one time. It was with somebody... Ooh, who was it with?
Probably Millie.
It could have been. It sounds like a Millie thing.
It feels like very Millie. We had Beast Ice because I was reminiscing about Bud Ice, mm-hmm. which had a short but glorious mm-hmm. run, I think, before we were really, drinking real drinking.
Yeah, age. Or at least before we were drinking, like, reinforced beer.
Yeah. What was the Bud with the penguin? Was it... Was that Bud Ice?
That was Bud Ice. Yeah, that was Bud Ice.
God, that's a great... That's one of the best marketing campaigns of all time. Man, creepy penguin. Doobie doobie doo. That's the best.
Hang on.
How's your cat?
I gotta go put some food in the dish, or it's gonna be a really ugly show for everyone. Hang on.
Just pandering with that loud voice. Just pandering to this audience.
Cut all that.
Now the other one can. Now the other one's here. Now he wants a kiss too. Give the other one a kiss. Check the other side. You know he went the other side. Hey. Lewis wants a kiss.
Come here, baby. Come kiss. No, he's licking.
Our YouTube numbers are going to skyrocket this week. Patrick kisses. Patrick mouth kisses cat.
10 easy ways to get along with a cat.
Oh boy. How was graduation?
It was great. It was absolutely perfect. It was done so fast. That was the idea.
Yeah.
It was Stella's 8th grade graduation.
It was Stella's 8th grade?
Yes, correct. Yep.
You told me Gloria's middle school,
which is Thursday.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I asked.
Yeah.
There's so many graduations.
Yeah, tell me about it. Yeah, it was great. I have not been to a graduation in a little while, probably been a year or two. And apparently, the new thing at graduation, you're not supposed to cheer. Can't cheer because it wastes everybody's time. There's 345 fucking kids you got to get through. If you clap for every single one.
Listen, I'm a college professor. Mm-hmm. I have been to so many fucking graduations mm-hmm. in the last dozen years. Mm-hmm. I understand. Yep. Do not cheer.
So what we did at this graduation, which I thought was very, very clever, because you don't want to cheer because then they have to wait before they announce the name of the next kid.
It takes for fucking ever.
So what they did was, after every kid's name was announced, the entire, uh-huh. this is wild, there's like 1,500 people in this place. After every single name was announced, the entire audience simultaneously gave one clap. That was it.
It's an elegant. Okay.
It was. All right. It was. Logistically, very impressive. Very impressive.
Yeah. The fact that you all bought into it as a group is incredible. That's great.
It took two names and we were 100% in sync. It was like, yeah.
You know why? Here's why. Because everyone in that out, every single individual there is thinking, we have got to get through this. This is an eighth grade graduation. I can't be here until midnight.
I want to clap for my kid, but I don't want to like clap for my kid. You know, like just the one.
Yeah.
It's eighth grade graduation. This isn't, you know.
I'll clap at high school.
This isn't them graduating from their GED program or something like that. This is eighth grade. Right. Okay.
Man, I sit here for the, this is my, I just sat through my 11th year as a professor mm-hmm. and I at a new school and it's all the same. Mm-hmm. And so what I would desperately want, I want a speed run graduation. Mm-hmm. I just want like, I don't want you to have to tell everyone like, hey, only clap once per name. Cause that's a good solution mm-hmm. for sure. But I want them to say, clap if you can, mm-hmm. cause I dare you.
Yeah.
Cause we're going to go so fast and just like rattle things mm-hmm. off. And in college, it's hard because they have to cross the stage mm-hmm. and they get the diploma, mm-hmm. the folder, and they shake the president's hand. And mm-hmm. I say just fucking and see, like make everyone sprint.
You know what I would do? Here's what I would do. Mm-hmm. Okay. You're going to like this. The very first name you call at graduation, after giving the warnings, no clapping until the very end, I'm dead uh-huh. serious this time, the very first name you call is a dummy name. You've got a dummy student. You've got just like a stand-in okay. student. You know, you see where I'm going?
You've got
here?
A sophomore.
Right, exactly. A sophomore like, that's pretty, yeah, Aaron Aronson. Yeah. And then...
Oh, yeah, that's me. Yeah. I'm graduating.
And then,
hello.
And then you got a second plant that starts clapping in the crowd. And you say, nope! And you take the diploma, and you set it on the floor, and you take a monster shit on it. And you say,
well, I was going to say light it on fire. I think that's...
Oh, okay.
But you're way worse. It doesn't, you know,
a paper shredder, a garbage can, throw it into a lake. Mm. I really don't care. And then Aaron Aronson has to like, he takes his cap off and he takes the gown off and he just walks into the sea. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Who's
and
next?
Then the registrar comes up to lead him to the computer right. where they're going to register him for another semester of classes.
I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry. Your grandma probably won't live to see it, but she's the one that claps, so it's kind of her fault.
We tried to tell them. I'm so sorry, Aaronson.
I said, Grandma Aaronson, turn the hearing aid up. We got a lot of really important instructions here. And she said, no, uh-huh. it makes me look old. And that's what happens.
Yep.
Sorry, Grandma Aronson.
So here we are. This is foolproof. I'm going to share it with the president of my university.
I'm sure
next time
he listens to the podcast. Sure. It's if he can wait till next That's Wednesday, true. It'll be fine.
Can I tell you, if you obviously he does not listen to the podcast. God, I hope he doesn't listen to the podcast. I don't know.
What about, of course,
it's never come up. But when I shouldn't say episode, when you come to Stanton to do a live show,
right.
I'm pretty sure he'll be there. Oh. It's a small town. And this is a good place to pitch that idea. So we can like circle back and we'll say like, Patrick, actually, Dr. Stein, thank you so much for being here. Patrick has a really good idea.
Yeah. I'll take out the shitting part if you want me to.
I think that might be best. I don't see him.
I'm workshopping all this. It's none of this is set in stone.
Yeah. He's not really a like lift the robes and shit in public kind of president.
Oh,
he's,
I thought you were in Virginia.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you went to Mizzou, so right. that makes sense. all right. Well, we've got a lot to cover tonight. Well, you were the one who said you couldn't do it till late. So I will cut out. I'm cutting out a lot of the notes. Mm. But before we get into it really quickly, I want to say two things. Number one, I hate that we have to cut this out because there's ghost news.
Okay.
And you know, I love hitting the sound effect.
You know, I've got time.
You don't have, I'm telling you, you
hit the button.
I don't know if
hit
you have
button.
Time. No.
Hit the right button.
Yeah.
What? I'm on the wrong whole dial completely. All right, hold on.
Ding.
Nope.
There we go.
Breaking news out of the U.S. Southeast. Three-year-old Lainey Litton is being haunted by the ghost of John Wilkes Booth.
Oh.
Lainey, an adorable three-year-old child who is a real human living in our today world, is concerned that the ghost of John Wilkes Booth, Abraham Lincoln's assassinator, is hiding under her bed.
Alleged assassinator.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
I mean, I just want to make sure.
We will not get sued for slander on this podcast. Thank you very much. Here's a quote from Lainey's mother. Quote, she was afraid to lie in her bed one night. I said, it's okay. You're safe. You're in your room. Nobody can bother you in your own house. She said, yeah, but what if John Wilkes Booth is under my bed? Like, what if he's hiding? Now, Lainey had clarified earlier that John Wilkes Booth was dead a long time now.
Absolutely. Right. We're all in agreement on that.
Yep. Yep. And Lainey added, quote, what if he comes and tries to take my stuffed animals away?
Oh, well, I don't think that's his scene. But I'd be really worried about him shooting you in the head, though. I'd be really worried about that part.
It's interesting you say that, because here to comment on the ghost of John Wilkes Booth is the ghost of John Wilkes Booth. John, are you there? Mr. Booth, thank you for joining
us. Yes, 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 yes. I am here. Yes, I am here. Yes.
Why do you sound very German, more German than I expected.
No, no, sir. No, I am a red-blooded American. I'm here to defend. Uh-huh. What's going on today that needs defending? I must have been called back for a reason.
I think you'd be pretty excited, actually, to hear what's going on today in the United States of America. Let me tell you. Can I ask you, where are you getting us from? Where am I reaching you? Where
are you? I'm in a tomb, a celebrated tomb, I assume, for the brave act that I performed when I still breathed breath.
Now, do you know how that all shook out?
I do not. Famously, I am not aware of how things shook out.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to that really quick. So you're
can't
not
wait.
Under the
can't wait.
You're you're not in the bedroom of a 3-year-old child under her bed.
No. The judge was extremely clear about that. I'm not allowed to do that at all.
Yeah. Very forward thinking judge. Have you ever considered though going and scaring a 3-year-old children and just stealing their stuff?
Maybe,
animals?
perhaps. Hear me out. Perhaps if there was perhaps some way to harness the screams of the children and use them to power a great metropolis. Only maybe under circumstances such as that, although the logistics would be impossible. Impossible.
Now, can I ask you a question? Have you seen the movie Monsters, Inc.?
A movie? You will have to update me on what a movie is, my friend.
Yeah, I thought that would be a wild question. It's
a movie.
It's so funny. Like,
what is
movie? Your idea. Movie. I haven't moved in so long. That's great. I mean, all great questions. So you're not haunting a 3-year-old girl in Kentucky?
Not to
right
the
now.
Best of my ability or knowledge.
Okay. That's fair. Do you know why a 3-year-old might think you might be lurking under her bed? Have you given signals? Are you appearing in dreams, perhaps? Is there anything
I assume
you can
she
think of?
Secretly admires me for my bravery. That's all.
Well, it's interesting you say that because,
perhaps, now hear me out. Perhaps she has a small figurine of John Wilkes Booth in her room because of the heroic deeds that I've performed. And she took this small figurine and she placed it inside of a chiffon robe, a medicine cabinet, something of this nature. And she placed it in there.
Yeah.
And she thought to herself, perhaps through the magic of this chiffon robe, John Wilkes Booth from this action figure may come to life and step out. And that would, of course, be very, very terrifying.
Yeah, and you would have no way of knowing that, but that actually resonates a lot with this particular show that you're on right now.
Interesting.
Because we've talked about
Wild.
Indian in the cupboard before.
Wild.
Yeah. Now, you don't know how this all shook out for you, like historically speaking.
No, again, very excited. Very excited.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, okay. Do you want to know?
Not really.
No, that's best.
I think I'm good with what I'm working with right now. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, yeah, no, and you know what? And thank you. Thank you mostly for saying that.
Of course.
So if you're not haunting the girl, that's good to hear. No. We heard some reports that you might be, so we're very excited to hear that's not true. Now, do you have any parting words for this three-year-old child who thinks that your ghost is under her bed scaring her every night?
No, nothing for the girl in general. I assume she will grow up to become another great
red-blooded Confederate soldier or something. Maybe we don't even need soldiers in this day and age. Just nothing to say to her, but you're welcome. You're welcome, little lady.
We will pass that along, and boy, for so many reasons, we are going to end this interview right now.
Goodbye.
Patrick, I don't know if you caught that, but we actually got an interview with the ghost of John Wilkes Booth.
Really? When I was upstairs taking a shit?
Yeah.
Weird. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good. You'll listen to it later. I think you'll really like it. Yeah. All right.
And you said we didn't have time.
I mean, you're going to be so mad when we are still at midnight recording this episode, but that's okay.
It's going to be midnight plus one for you, buddy. So
That's true. The last one thing I want to say before getting into the story is that there's new merch in the works. It's not quite available yet, but in the works from Fox and Quill Studios. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to be the first one to show you what it is.
Please, God,
I think you'll really like it.
Please, 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 please. I love it. I love it. I would
describe what you're seeing.
I would absolutely wear this shirt, not to a family gathering. it's a sketch of a doll, a little girl's doll. No eyes in the doll, which isn't a great look.
No, black voids.
Black void eyes, black void mouth. And above it, in a very playful but slightly unsettling font, it just says, "I play with haunted dolls." Mm-hmm. I like that a lot.
Yeah. So that's coming soon from the iTag store.
Can't wait.
And thank you to Fox Quill Studio, as usual. And it'll be on Patrick's bosoms shortly.
I can't wait for the Necrodramacon shirt with the belly button on it. I can't wait. Again, gold. Gold.
I've not seen any designs yet. I know. That's gonna take a while, because that's a nuanced. Yeah.
It's hard to communicate with, like, is that a belly button? Because, you know, do you innie, do you go outie?
You want the right amount of hair around it, or under it, or above it? Like, what do you do?
It can't be profane.
You
know, yeah. Can't be profane.
No. 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 Why would it
Absolutely
be?
Absolutely not.
It's not a profane type of thing. It's just a Necrodramacon. It's just a Necrodramacon. All right. So, all right. Now, are you ready to hear a ghost story?
Yes. It's booty time.
New sound on the board, by the way.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting.
Should have said it in advance. New sound from last week's episode. Thank you to Jeremy for clipping that. I mean, literally minutes before we started recording, it all worked out great.
You guys are recording it, are you? No. Oh, I got a good one for you.
I want to say this week, thank you very much. The notes were not taken by me. These were sent to me by listener Caroline Jones.
Hey, thank you, Caroline.
Thank you very much. Caroline has sent some absolute bangers in the past, so you know when she sends a story in, it's going to be a good one. Now, this one, I will say, and apologies to Caroline, it was, as she acknowledged as well, it's too long. It would have been, as she sent, I think, two episodes. I did cut some choice details out, which I didn't love to do, but it's still really great. But boy, thank you, Caroline, for putting in all the work to to share this, because it's interesting. So here we go. Isambard Kingdom Brunel was born in 1806.
Oh, it's a person.
This is, yep.
Would have been wrong.
Would have been wrong if I'd guessed. Born in 1806 in Portsmouth, England. His father was Mark Isambard Brunel, and he was a Frenchman who had fled France after the Revolution. His mother was an English woman named Sophia Kingdom.
Sophia Kingdom?
Kingdom. That's a powerful last name.
It is, indeed.
Yeah. They had three children, one of them, of course, being our friend Isambard. And in 1808, the family moved to London. So Mark Brunel, the father, he's a very good engineer, so much so that once when he ended up in the debtor's prison, the British government, themselves paid £5,000 to clear his debts to prevent him from moving to Russia.
Okay.
You are a terrible son of a bitch, but you're our terrible son of a bitch, and please don't go to the Ruskies. We need you. So young Isambard learned his trade from his father. He was also a very talented engineer.
Ooh.
I will say Caroline made a, she called out the fact that she liked the story so much because you would like it so much.
I'm so far batting 1,000. Loving it.
Yeah. And I said, we don't have to worry about what Patrick likes.
I'm really interested how you impress yourself upon people as a talented engineer in this time. Would you're 1860-ish? Is that where we are?
1806 when he was born.
Yeah. So I'm really, I don't really know like how you do that. I mean, do you like fix a wheel on a wagon? I don't really know. I mean,
what if this were square? Yeah. Let's try it. What a visionary. Actually, we will talk about that, Patrick. Uh-huh. She's sent very many examples, some of which I had to cut for time, and we still have very many good examples.
Well, so there are parts that you would be interested in. Thankfully, those are on the cutting room floor.
Yeah. We don't care about that. So Isambard and his father, they worked together, for example, in the 1820s on a project to construct a tunnel under the River Thames in London.
Oh, okay.
All right. So tunneling through the soft earth, the mud, it's difficult, right?
I mean, I guess.
It's 1820. Oh, it seems actually seems pretty easy.
They're digging a hole. Like, we've been doing that for like a long time. But
oh, I'm sorry. The earth is wet and soft and easy to move. That seems pretty tough.
Let's get an engineer in here to figure out how to dig a hole, not down, but down and sideways. I don't know, guys.
Not having it collapse in on you is probably, I would guess that's a hard part, right?
The shoring is always the hard part of those.
The shoring up. Mm-hmm. Now it is also difficult because the mud is full of sewage.
Oh.
Which it is the town. It is London. I did say that. The mud's full of sewage, which gives off methane gas. Mm-hmm. And that methane gas is ignited by the miners' oil lamps.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's like constantly explosions happening in this tunnel. So fires are happening constantly. The tunnel also flooded several times during construction.
I'm sure that smelled great. I'm sure sewage flooding under the Thames.
And you see RFK Jr. swimming around in it, and you're like, what's going on? How did you get here?
Why are all of you in my pool? Well, that's the problem here, RFK.
It's a sewage. It's sewage creek. We didn't know those things overlapped, but you know, it's not 2025 yet. In 1827, when they had drained and repaired the tunnel after a flood, they celebrated the fact they were able to drain and tunnel by having a banquet inside the tunnel.
Oh, this is the grossest banquet. Even for English food, this is probably the grossest banquet ever. Oh no. Everyone has their dandy little jackets on too. This is
oh man, of course they do. Of course. And when you left this space, there's a fire burning. You just toss all your clothes onto it and never think about them again.
Maybe take off the top one, two layers of skin while you're at it, because those are never gonna smell right again.
Nope. Oh. But that's a painting of that The Banquet in the Thames Tunnel by George Jones, 1827. Mm-hmm. How lovely. In the end, the tunnel took 18 years to build. Mm-hmm. It eventually opens in 1843. But here's a fun fact.
Wham!
It is the first tunnel known to have been constructed successfully underneath a navigable river.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's a pretty big deal.
Clearly.
It was at first used by horse-drawn carriages, of course, and pedestrians, but in 1869, it was converted into a railway tunnel.
Nice.
And as such, it is still in use today.
Hmm. Wow.
Uh-huh. Is it still going great?
Does it smell any better? I'm going to say no.
It smells, actually, you wouldn't believe it, but it is worse. So, Brunel, though, he steps away from tunnels. He did this thing. It took him much of his life. Mm-hmm. And he's like, this has been great.
Right.
I don't want to do it again.
Exactly. Yeah.
And he focuses on some new and exciting projects of engineering. He's appointed chief engineer of the proposed Great Western Railway.
Oh.
Which is going to run from London to the west of England.
Where is over there?
Which is not.
Yeah.
Not that far.
Like you can,
it's not
that far. You can see it. It's.
I feel like I could run a rail line from London to West England. But he was in charge. Among his jobs, he surveyed.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We love that on this show.
Mm-hmm. How much of England is left to survey in like the, you know, mid 19th century exactly?
It's been inhabited for 20,000 years at this point. So it was a pretty easy job. He just asked people, like, is this flat? No. Yeah, that seems flat, right?
Is that yours?
Like, is that your property line? Okay, yeah,
cool. Good. Okay. I'll write it down.
He surveyed, designed, and supervised the building of the railway. Now, this entailed a series of technical achievements that were pretty impressive for the time, including several bridges, viaducts, and the box tunnel.
Hey.
Which at 1.8 miles, you know something about a box tunnel.
Especially ones that are 1.8 miles long.
Is Amy available? Could she come down?
No, she's...
Just checking. Mm-hmm. At the time, was the longest railway tunnel in the world.
Can't get away from tunnels. Once you become a tunnel man, there's no coming back.
Just when I think I'm out. Tunnels bring me back in. Several of his famous bridges are still in daily use today. Mm. There was a whole section about the bridges that is genuinely interesting, but I had to cut it for time. But they are around and seem like bridges. Some of Brunel's projects, though, were technically superior, but not commercially successful.
Okay, so
he's got a bit of a kind of a tortured artist kind of phase here. For example, he made the controversial decision to build his railway with a broad gauge, the distance between the rails, of 7 feet and 1/4 inch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he did this because it would make the trains more stable and more comfortable to ride.
Right.
The problem is all the other railways in the UK use a standard gauge, which is 4 feet, 8.5 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if you know how trains work.
Right. They can't really change easily between the two, from what I recall.
No, they're pretty set, yeah. I think, in their ways. So no other railways adopted this gauge, which meant that for all the freight and passengers moving between the Great Western Railway and any other railway, they had to be unloaded and then loaded onto different trucks.
Boy, it seems like a dumb carriages. Idea.
It really seems dumb. It's not great. It's not great. It's like your idea would, it's best. Mm-hmm. Best idea.
Yes.
And no one will do it.
Yeah. It's like the Esperanto of rail gauges, you know, great idea. Love it. Never going to happen though, I'm afraid. Yeah.
Never ever. Yeah. So, this proved to be so inefficient. The Great Western Railway was converted to standard gauge.
Yeah. That's going to happen.
Not surprising, but also really expensive and kind of, you know,
yeah,
not good for Brunel.
Back to the tunnels
with you. Oh, and now we found a mine, and a mine is a tunnel. Yeah. So good news, get in there. But nevertheless, Brunel becomes famous as one of Britain's best and most innovative engineers. He's called. Oh, sorry, you're yawning. You told me we had lots of time.
Yeah, so I was. I'm a big broad gauge guy, and you just like you blew past it, and I'm just. I'm feeling I'm not going to be very interested in the rest of this.
Broad gauge guy. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So excited with broad gauge, and now we're off it. Brunel was called the Little Giant, because his achievements were immense.
Right. But he was wee.
His stature was 5'4".
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, he's a little guy. Mm-hmm. In 1843, and this is an important one, he was performing a conjuring trick for the amusement of his children.
Okay. All right. I'm kind of with you.
Magic.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Not conjuring like spirits. Conjuring like look
at this coin.
I ate the coin. Oh, now I have to pass the coin. Yeah. I played that one before. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. So he's playing this magic trick for his children, and during that time, he accidentally inhaled a half-sovereign coin.
Are you serious? Uh-huh.
Which became lodged in his windpipe.
Oh, no. That's where all your wind goes.
That's the pipe for the wind. So this is bad. Now, it's not so perfectly lodged that it's killing him.
Sure.
It's lodged thusly, I would say, on an angle of some sort.
Okay, so he's whistling when he breathes.
Yes. Okay. It's a blockage for sure. And one that is bad, right. I assume. but he can live. He can breathe, uh-huh. Right?
Right.
So he's like, huh, what am I going to do now?
It's more like, what am I going to do now?
That's right. So he designs an apparatus whereby he was strapped to a board mm-hmm. on a horizontal pivot mm-hmm. so that then he could hang nearly upside down uh-huh. on this board.
Right.
Okay.
This is to dislodge the coin?
Yeah. His thought was
okay.
hanging thusly, mm-hmm. and if he coughed a lot,
it should just come out.
And if he's being slapped right. on the back,
yeah.
which means he's face down on this board, right. I guess.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe like cut an opening in the board for you to be slapped through.
Yeah.
That's how I would do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I like those real sexy massage videos. Yeah, you get it.
I also love that this has to be the most hastily invented thing ever. He's
okay. Help me.
First, call the patent office because they need to get down here.
So he straps himself to this board, and he's hanging that way. He's coughing, and people are slapping on the back. Mm-hmm. He's hanging there for days.
Oh no!
No success. Mm. After 6 weeks, the doctors forbid him to continue. They're like, "This has to stop. This will kill right. you. You cannot keep hanging upside down all day long. It's not good for you." So they advise surgery. They want to do a tracheotomy.
Yes,
they want to cut in. Yeah. And take it out.
Yep.
Which
I mean, it's the 19th century. Fine. When is there a safer time to cut into somebody's throat?
I would actually, you know, you make a joke, but based on this podcast, that's the safest possible thing to do because we have had so many ghosts who have been born out of not having a tracheotomy.
I'm just imagining the doctors like trying to figure out where to make the incision, just like knocking on his throat in a few different spots. Like you're trying to find like a stud in the wall. Like,
blink. Flick the.
Does that sound like a ding? That sounds like a
boom,
ding to me.
Boom, yep. Ding, boom. Oh, I found it. It's a ding.
Let me get a marker. There it is right there.
So they want to do a tracheotomy. Now, Brunel does not want that to happen.
I'm kind of with him on this one.
So. So he sketches a new design for a special pair of forceps to be used during the surgery.
I was hoping forceps, some sort of like long tweezer may be preferable.
Yeah, I feel
here.
Like if you got a half sovereign coin, I don't know how big this thing is, but if you got one stuck in your throat, I think you'd have some ideas after several weeks being hung upside down. So you can relate. That's good. So the doctors were like, all right, let's try it. So they manufacture these forceps. Mm-hmm. And they twice try to retrieve the coin, and both times unsuccessful with these forceps. The following day, Brunel is strapped to his apparatus again. Mm-hmm. He's hung upside down again. Mm-hmm. He coughed. The coin fell into his mouth. And he spit it out, and he's fine.
Oh, that's awesome.
Good for it him. God worked it all out for him. You just need like 5 weeks of hanging upside down every day, and you can do it.
It's some sketchy-ass 19th century doctor digging around in your throat with an invented tool. And then poof!
It might have helped. It might have dislodged something, but no surgery, no tracheotomy. Mm-hmm. Just came out.
Success.
So he does not go on to be a magician.
Yeah. or again, the best part of it would be he spits the coin out and says, ta-da!
The prestige! anyway, so that happens, and that's crazy. But the part of Brunel's engineering, which we're going to focus on for this story, is the ships that he built.
Oh, okay.
Even before the Great Western Railway opened, Brunel proposed that the transport westward should not stop at the coast, but continue all the way across the Atlantic to New York.
Exactly. It's harder to build the train tracks that way, but, you know,
But we could do it. If we could solve that ocean pressure issue, I think we could really get the tracks down there. Yeah. This is not the first, you know, 19th century lunatic we've had trying to say, like, we can, okay, well, listen, if we take this all the way to the coast, what if then I also have a shipping line that takes us to a different place, and then we build more tracks? That was like, what's a Canadian? The Canadian guy who was American who did the hotel in, I don't know, Toronto or...
Fuck.
You know what? Doesn't matter.
None of this matters.
Anyway... So, where are we here? He wants to
build some boats,
go to New York. And he wants to be the first person to use steamships for transatlantic traffic.
Oh, okay.
At this point, they're still using wind.
Really?
Because again, this is 18...
They're like they're like
40-something?
Christopher Columbusing across the ocean still at this point.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brave. Very stupid.
Now... I will say a handful of steamships had already crossed the Atlantic, but they relied on sail as well as steam. So it's like a hybrid, which is nice. Because the thought was a steamer, like a full steamer, would have to carry so much coal that it would be totally unviable.
Sure. Yeah.
We would sink as soon as we hit the water. But Brunel, he's a huge fucking nerd. And you're going to love this so much because you're a huge fucking nerd. Brunel is apparently the first one to realize the carrying capacity of a ship increases as the cube of its dimensions.
Correct.
While the water resistance only increases as the square of its dimensions. So you can do up, out on a ship, and that's way big. But in water, you can just do... out, down. I missed one, but it's you get it.
Yeah. I understand.
Yeah. Kind Which of. Meant that large ships were actually more fuel efficient. Right?
Yes.
Do you want to explain that in a way to our audience that makes more sense of what I said?
You know, it's kind of like,
you don't know.
It's like aerodynamics. You know, it's skinny, not fat, skinny. So like when the water hits it, the water like goes off to the side, right? It doesn't.
Not,
you don't want to build your boat with a flat front on it, like a refrigerator. You don't want that. Refrigerator.
Yeah, I don't think that's what they're saying. I think you might not understand nautical engineering.
I'll be honest. I really don't care at this point at night. It's like 10 o'clock at night. I don't really give a shit.
You told me we could do this. God damn. We still have an hour and a half to go. So Brunel designs a ship. His first ship, the SS Great Western, it's built in 1837. She's made of wood. And driven by paddle wheels on the sides.
Oh.
But she also had four masts for auxiliary sails.
Yeah. Just in case.
Yeah. You don't want to be stranded out there. There's no coming back from that. She was 235 feet long, which was the longest steamship in the world for 1 year. So at the time, biggest.
Big one.
In the next 8 years, she completed 45 round trips between England and New York and was profitable, proving that steamships were efficient and reliable for ocean transport.
45 round trips in 1 year? That's crazy.
No, 8 years.
Oh, I'm sorry, 8 years. I was like, that boat is moving.
Okay. No, 8 years. And as soon as the Great Western is launched, Brunel starts plans for her sister ship. Now, initially... this was going to be similar in design, and it was going to be renamed or named the City of New York. However, Brunel's working on it, and then decides his next ship should not be built of wood, because wood is bad.
Right. I mean, it floats, which is a nice feature.
It does float. It is good. But he wants to build his next boat with iron.
Famously not floating.
Not floating, which is bad. There are benefits, which I did cut for time, but one of them I kept is that iron flexes less in the waves.
Yes.
Which means longer ships can be built. They won't break. And if you're longer, you can slice through the water.
Correct.
Getting better.
See?
Right?
That's exactly what I said. Yeah. Yes.
Well, yeah, that's what you said for a different question earlier. Yeah, that's true. So you want to make a ship of iron. So Brunel is like all in on this idea, and with every draft of his new design, his new planned ship, which he does not call the City of New York, he now calls it the SS Great Britain, gets longer and longer. The ship is being built in a specially constructed dry dock in Bristol. And while that's happening, Brunel actually had another change of plan. He had the idea of using a screw propeller rather than
paddle wheels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, at this time, screw propellers were still an experimental idea. Do you want to talk about the difference between screw propellers and paddle wheels?
So a screw propeller lives entirely underwater. You might think of it like the propeller on a like a fishing boat or a John boat or something like that. Yeah. I mean, although a lot of those speedboats are like jet engines, but yeah, something, oh, you know, it sits under the water. It's that thing that your dad, after he's had a couple too many beers, accidentally lets you swim too close to, and then screams at you to not touch the prop guy. What are you guys doing down there? That's the thing. Paddle wheels, the thing comes up out of the water and then back down again, like an old timey casino ship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's faster and it's more efficient. And it's better. Mm-hmm. And right.
Probably more difficult to manufacture because they look really complicated.
Well, you know, we'll get there. So he persuades the company to abandon the already half-constructed paddle wheel engines in favor of completely new engines suitable for powering a propeller. For all the reasons you've mentioned, mostly it's underwater completely, and we'll just get you there. Mm-hmm. So the Great Britain was floated out of her dry dock in 1843. And what happened here? I have a photograph for you. It's not a photograph, it's a painting. There she is.
Oh, she's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Good boat, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a good looking boat. Sexy boat.
So many flags.
Big sexy boat.
Yeah.
Lots of people with little tiny boats right next to the big experimental boat, though. I don't think I like...
Now, they're very close.
I don't think I like what those people are doing right now. But, you know.
Yeah. Well, they've never seen a big boat. They don't know what to do.
Yeah.
They don't know this isn't safe.
It's like when they bring a polar bear into the London Zoo. They're like, oh, this looks great. We should totally keep this thing around.
Can we pet it? Yeah. Ah! But they send the ship out, but then it's found that she's too big to fit through the lock to exit the Bristol dock area.
Oh.
And it takes more than 1 year of alterations to the dock before she can get out to sea.
That would have been like one of the first things I would have measured. Just,
yeah. So, anyway, so it's completed in 1845. The Great Britain, finally, she sets out to sail. She's a revolutionary vessel, the first ship to combine an iron hull with screw propulsion, 322 feet in length. It's more than 100 feet longer and 1,000 tons larger than any other ship previously built.
Holy cow.
She's fucking huge. She was fitted to accommodate a total of 360 passengers, along with 1,200 tons of cargo and 1,200 tons of coal for fuel. Also was a luxury boat So her main dining room was supported by 24 white and gold columns with ornamental capitals of great beauty, while 8 arabesque pilasters decorated with, quote, beautifully painted oriental flowers and birds enhanced the aesthetic effect. The archways of the doors were tastefully carved and gilded and surmounted with medallion heads. Mirrors around the walls added an illusion of spaciousness, and the walls themselves were painted in a delicate lemon-tinted hue with highlights of blue and gold. Hmm.
Sounds beautiful.
It sounds very nice. Great Britain's maiden voyage was in 1845, and the ship made 2 crossings to New York that year. 2 crossings to New York the next year. Mm-hmm. Now, folks were cautious of the new ship. Mm-hmm. They were like, it's too big. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. No, thank you.
Yep. I don't even see how it's going anywhere. There's no big paddle wheels splashing me in the face. There's no wind I can see.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure what kind of magic exists below the waterline, but I don't trust it.
But I don't think I like wizards on my boats. Mm-hmm. And so there were not a lot of passengers, but after a few trips, after a couple of years, people were like, okay, all right. You know what? This is happening. Let's do it. On her third voyage of 1846, she set off for New York, again, with 180 passengers on board. The Great Britain leaves Liverpool and heads to the Irish Sea. Now, the idea is the crew is going to look for a lighthouse on the Isle of Man.
Oh, yes. We're back. We're back, baby.
We're back to the Isle of Man. One of my favorite ghosties, Jeff the Talking Mongoose. They're going to look for the Lighthouse of Alaman. They will go past it, and then they will know to turn northwards to head around the North of Ireland. Mm-hmm. But it's a dark, rainy night, and they miss the lighthouse.
Oh.
And so after some time, they're like, I don't know what's going on. Let's keep going forward.
Sure.
So they run with some speed straight into the shore of Dundrum Bay on the east coast of Ireland. Now, no one is injured.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievably.
Right.
Passengers are all safely taken off the ship next morning. However, she is wedged in there pretty good. And it takes another year for her to get out.
I was going to say, yeah, they have to build a bigger ship than that to drag her back out, I would imagine.
Yeah, it takes a long time. Eventually, she's taken back to Liverpool, but the expense, because it costs £34,000 to get her out. And her owners had no more money, and they were like, fuck. So they sell her for £25,000.
Mm.
So they take a loss, but it's going to be good on their taxes.
That's fair.
Mm-hmm. That's a write-off. That's probably how that works in England still. After reports, after repairs and a little refitting job, she did once more run transatlantic. Then she was sold again, though. But, you know, so the ship is changing. By now, a lot of Brunel's original engineering has been removed. She has a new engine, new boilers, new propeller. This is like the ship of
Theseus.
Theseus. Yeah. It's like, is it still mm-hmm. Brunel's ship? I don't know. Right. Maybe. I don't know. She sold again to another firm. They give her another refit, increasing her passenger capacity from 360 to 730, which is fucking crazy because that's huge.
But they had all the room for cargo before, so they probably have plenty more mass to give. It's just
sort of. The reason we find that we do this is because in 1851, there was a gold rush in Victoria, Australia. Mm-hmm. And the new owners of the ship want to cash in on this by sending as many dumb idiots as they can to Australia to go search for gold. And this works really well. So it's mostly, at this point, it's mostly passenger space.
Okay.
Even after the gold fever dies down, the trip remains commercially successful because people, for some reason, want to go to Australia.
Which is still a prison colony at this time, I imagine.
I think it is. Yeah, I do. Yes, I think yes. So it might have been contracted under the books by by the government. But this is the Great Britain standard for the next 25 years. They're just sending people to Australia. Mm-hmm. Trip takes about 2 months each way. Mm-hmm. In addition to passengers and crew, on a typical voyage, the ship would carry one cow, maybe about 40 sheep.
Mm-hmm.
150 or so pigs, 100 goats, and 1,100 chickens, ducks, geese, and turkeys.
That is so much fowl. 1,100
it's
birds.
A lot of fowl.
One cow and over 1,000 birds?
One cow and 1,100 fowl. That seems weird, right? Mm. Like, is one cow enough to do milk for?
I would figure you bring
it's for milk and food.
Okay,
obviously, yeah.
This looks
not just for like sex and stuff. It's for it's for milk and food. I don't know. So, but her freshwater tanks carry 35,000 gallons, mm-hmm. and she has two condensers which could produce 1,500 gallons of freshwater per day from seawater. So I don't know.
Okay, fair enough.
Doing it. The regular captain on these voyages was a Scotsman named John Gray. Now, he was a capable and trusted captain who had the position for 18 years and did 27 voyages.
Phew.
He was described as, quote, brave, skillful, manly, and resourceful.
Oh, man. I bet he was beating off with a stick every single time.
It's funny you say that. Let's keep going here. It's firm with fare with his crew and popular among first class and third class passengers alike.
Hang on. But not. I'm not so in.
Not the second
not
class.
Not the second class. I mean, they're fine and all, but it's mostly suburban wives and they're a little boring.
The second class passengers, they know a thing or two about the world.
Right. Yeah.
First class, third class. those interests are strategic, for sure. Gray took particular care of the young women traveling to Australia to be married, becoming known as, quote, the patron saint of unprotected ladies.
I mean, really, you kick them off the boat and you know you got at least 4 months till you would ever see them again. And by then, they don't remember which boat you're on.
No, I don't think so. Shave that beard, mm-hmm. You're fine. On several occasions, upon arriving in Melbourne, he hastened to church in his dress uniform to perform the fatherly office of giving a bride away.
Hmm. Okay.
So he's doing it weird. He's protecting the girls, being the father, and
yeah, I don't know.
Normal stuff.
Sure.
In 1872, the Great Britain had reached Australia in a record time of 54 days and was returning home across the Atlantic when Captain Gray told his crew that he was, quote, suffering severely from liver and stomach complaint.
Hmm. Okay.
How do you know you're suffering from liver complaint?
Oof. I wonder if
that's tough, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if liver is just like their general, this side of me hurts. You know. Ow! Yeah.
Yeah. He also was suffering from anxiety because the ship was falling behind schedule. So, yeah.
Okay.
He could really use like a Zoom psychologist.
Yeah, or a handful of Xanax, either way.
Yeah. The Headspace app would have been great for this guy. And yes, Xanax. It's reported that on the previous voyage, he had been observed, quote, frequently walking the deck, striking his temples and saying, I am ruined. Which is pretty much what you want from the captain of your really big boat.
Sailing blindly through the night while you go above deck and you see the captain beating himself to death.
So one night in 1872, the captain went missing from the ship and was never found again.
Oh. Okay.
There was a window at the stern found open. It was assumed the captain had taken his own life by climbing out of that window. Although other theories do suggest it was an accident. He fell off the boat. Or, hold on a second. Let me get this wrong, but just... God damn it, come on. Do I not have this? I thought
he walked.
I'll just say it. Dun dun dun. Was murdered. Boy. What a journey. Anyway, in 1876, the Great Britain ceased passenger voyages and was laid up and offered for sale. 6 years later, she's bought by another company. Her engines and the passenger accommodation were again stripped. She becomes a cargo sailing ship,
mm-hmm.
carrying coal from South Wales around Cape Horn to San Francisco. The trip there and back took over 1 year.
Oh,
fucking crazy. On a third of those voyages, while near the Cape Horn, the ship faced such strong winds that it was making little progress. Her hull was leaking and straining, and on April 18th, the crew asked the captain to head back to the Falkland Islands. Please, God, can we go back to the Falkland Islands?
I have to pee so bad. Please.
I've been holding it since Wales. Please. I can do it for 8 months, but not 8 months in 1 day. They struggle. So the captain says, thank you for asking. No. We will not go back. We're going forward. Even though the boat is struggling, we're going forward. They go on for 3 weeks, and on May 10th, two of the masts were lost overboard.
Oops! I guess we have to go back to the Falkland Islands now because the mast's falling over into the ocean.
It's only two of them. I think there are 1, 2, 3, 6. So that's not bad. Yeah. It's like a third. It's not good, but it's not Terrible.
We could definitely make it back to the Falklands with just the four masks, right? I think.
I don't know. We could. Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, yes, but we could also probably make it to San Francisco, right? On the 13th of May, the crew, once again, 3 days later, they asked the captain, can we please go back to the Falkland Islands? Finally, he agrees, and the ship does indeed head back to the Falklands. Now, it's damaged beyond belief. So the company who owns it now is like, why don't we just sell this ship to the Falkland Islands company? And they do. And the Falkland Islands use this as a, they use this as a storage hulk for coal. So it's like this floating thing that can't sail anywhere, right. But they do use it for coal as a like storage room for coal.
Okay.
That floats.
So if you needed to say, if you needed to load a ship with coal, you probably couldn't take that huge ship all the way into port. Because, like, how big it was.
But could you take it to this fucking weird ghost ship?
Maybe. I got a. Yeah. There's a guy named Cletus out there with a shovel. He'd love to meet you.
This went on until 1937, when finally the Great Britain was towed to Sparrow Cove, 3.5 miles from the port, and she was scuttled and abandoned. Mm. However, Brunel's reputation as one of Britain's greatest engineers. And again, this guy did tunnels. Mm. He did bridges. Mm-hmm. He did boats.
He made that dinner in the sewage tunnel. Other stuff I had to cut
from time. He had dinner in a sewage tunnel. Very brave. His reputation is so good that there were some people who wanted to rescue this ship and bring it home.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know. That's how you know people have too much money.
It's like, at the bottom of the ocean, so y'all.
It's,
we can make another one.
Scuttle this fucking ship. Like, we can do a replica. But in 1967, a group of rich idiots began raising the funds to do this. And in 1970, the Great Britain was hoisted onto a floating pontoon from the Falkland fucking islands and towed by a tug all the way back to Great Britain. SS Great Britain was placed into the same dry dock in which she had been built, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
I don't think it's worth it. But I think it's cool. If you're going to do it, like, yeah, it's cool. You can put her into the same dock that she was built in. That's fine. And since 1970 has been gradually restored as a museum ship, which now attracts over 150,000 visitors per year.
Seems high. It really seems high.
Way too fucking much.
It's like 500 people a day. It doesn't seem right.
Bristol must be the dumbest town. It's like, yeah, please, like, please show me, show me this shit.
Do you guys
please
have like God. A soccer team or something we can go see? No, nothing. Just, okay, fine. We'll go see the ship again. That's okay. Yeah, totally.
All right. Yeah. Take all my money, I guess. Since it's been back there, there have been several incidents that have supported the case for the ship being haunted. One of the ghosts is believed to be that of Captain Gray, the captain who disappeared in mid-Atlantic in 1872, the guy who jumped out the window or was taken by, you know, the world. In 1992, Sonny Graffo, a 17-year-old who was working in a souvenir shop, had a strange experience on board the ship. Here is his quote. I was looking across a deep chasm into the bowels of the ship about 30 or 40 feet below me, and there were beams of wood going across the gantries. I did a double take and saw a chap sat on the beam of wood staring across the gap at me. He was wearing a white-collared shirt, had broad shoulders, a gray-white beard, and looked scruffy. He just sat there swinging his legs and looked like he had been dragged through a hedge backwards, a bit like Captain Birdseye. I assume that's some thing that
probably somebody famous
British people know. Yeah. I thought he was a workman and called across to him. He just sat there staring at me. Then I wondered how he could have got there, as there was no way of getting out to the plank. So he goes back to the shop, and he's told that it was probably Johnny, an apparition that had been seen before by other employees. Further quote, I went white and the hairs on the back of my neck stood up as I wondered if I had seen a ghost. I just froze when she told me the story, and when I saw the picture of Captain Gray, it was strikingly similar. Security officer reports a following experience from his checking the ship in the evening. Quote, I saw a door move backwards and forwards and heard noises on board, including the sound of locked doors slamming near the captain's cabin. I actually watched a door handle turn clockwise slowly. And when I tried to open the door, it was locked. When I use my...
Yeah, I'm thinking if you see a ghost turn a doorknob, I'm not going to also then turn that doorknob and be like, huh, I wonder what that ghost is doing in here.
What if it's not a ghost? What if it's just like a friendly face on the other side who's like slowly like... Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought they didn't realize the museum was closed. I'll just be on my way.
I wanted to hang out with you. What if it's your friend? What's your BFF who comes to... on your night shift.
To hide in your museum. That would be kind of fun, actually. Yeah. That'd be fun.
Yeah, yeah. So, you don't know.
Yeah. We'll have to do that on the baseball road trip. We'll have to, like, hide in the house in a few different spots. Just kind of, you know, surprise each other. Sounds like fun.
Let's do some real ghost shit on this trip. Tune back in 2 weeks when we recap the ghost shit we do each other on our baseball trip.
And see who accidentally gets shot on the baseball trip.
It will be in Texas, so...
It will be one of us.
Good luck to us all. let's see. When I used my key to open the door, there was no one in the room. Then I heard a bang and heavy footsteps at the other end of the promenade deck and watched a door slam shut. When I checked it, the door was locked. Phantom piano music is also heard by some staff members, though no one has ever seen at the piano when it's playing. Derek Sinclair, a conservation consultant, was working in the forward hold one night all by himself. He distinctly heard the sound of boots on stairs in the crew quarters. He went to check, and he found the compartment empty, and his colleague in the side office confirmed that no one else had been on the ship at the time, though he had heard also the footsteps going around there. Other ghosts reported on the ship include that of Mrs. Cohen, who tragically and mysteriously died aboard the ship a few short weeks after her wedding. No details on that story. Ghost of a young sailor who fell from the rigging is there. The SS Great Britain has been featured on an episode of TV's Most Haunted. And was described by the host as one of the top five most haunted places they have ever visited. Oof. And that is the story of the SS Great Britain.
What do you think all those ghosts were doing that was sitting out at the bottom of the ocean? It was scuttled for like decades, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So,
where else are you going to go?
I guess. I mean, it's like... holding your breath. I'm not sure how ghosts work down there.
I don't think ghosts have breath. Okay. I think you just like, kind of hang out, right? It's kind of cool though to think like, if I were alive, I could never be at the bottom of the ocean. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm dead, wow, what a wonder this place is.
Quick, I need to go die on a ship that's about to be scuttled.
Yeah. It's kind of neat. It's kind of neat.
Yes, tour all the Carnival cruise ships and find the one that looks like the most questionable. And
I would find the oldest Carnival cruise ship. It may tip over in very shallow water. Yeah. You might have to do some work on your end to make that happen for you, but you can get there.
And then go through just like licking every doorknob in the whole place, and you will be dead by sunrise. It'll be...
One way or the other, you are fucked, my friend. Absolutely. I don't know. What do you think? Good ghosts?
I think good ghosts. Yeah. They're right there at the end. Yeah. I liked them.
Yeah. All right. It's so late. I have to go to bed. So I think we will wrap this up. And I will say this is a production of Smith Show Media. Notes this week were taken not by me, Clayton Smith, but by our one of our favorite listeners, Caroline Jones. Thank you so much, Carolyn. I'm sorry I had to cut so much for time, but boy, it's pretty late. and you were right in your original message. This could have been three episodes. All the funny jokes were from Patrick Dean. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our social media team consists of Kai Valonis, Jennifer Jones, and Sam Murdoch. Fox and Quill Studios handles all of our merch. Go check it out. The designs coming are so good. They're so good. The designs we have there are so good. The ones coming are so good. It's great. And as for us, I guess we'll see you next week. And in the meantime, don't get on boats. We've said it so many times and you keep doing it. Please stop. Please stop getting on boats, because if you keep getting on boats, there is 100% chance you'll be the subject of next week's Is This a Ghost?